Gerard, your host for Inside Great American Music. And as you know by now, we're here every Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Diamond, 88.7 WICR. Our show revolves around the great American songbook, and this week we continue our series of Barbra Streisand. So please join us this Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern, right here on 88.7 The Diamond, WICR.
Here at WICR, we love connecting with our listeners over the airwaves. And you can connect with us even more by liking us on Facebook and following us on Twitter at WICR Online, where you can find exclusive station content. Don't forget to also log on to our homepage on WICRonline.org.
Hello, Indiana. This is Dr. Laura Merrifield Wilson, host of Positively Politics. I'd like to invite you to join our conversation on the current issues and events in politics with the experts who know them best. Every Saturday morning here on WICR at 11:30, we break down the sometimes negative and often complicated world of politics in a nonpartisan, straightforward, and educationally rooted way. You won't want to miss the discussion on Positively Politics Saturday morning at 11:30 right here on The Diamond.
Broadcasting from the University of Indianapolis, this is 88.7 The Diamond, WICR-FM and HD1, Indianapolis.
The opinions expressed on the following program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WICR management or ownership.
It's time for She Says Art and He Says Science, your weekly hour of edutainment as you learn about the creative interaction between artists and scientists with your host Jill Dittmeyer, a journalist and arts enthusiast, and Mark Kiesling, the founder and executive director of the Da Vinci Pursuit. The call-in phone number is 317-788-3314. Now it's time for She Says Art and He Says Science.
Good afternoon. I am Jill Dittmeyer, the curious journalist and arts enthusiast.
And I'm Mark Kiesling, the founder and executive director.
We usually award our Artist of the Month honor to one artist.
Excuse us for 1 second.
Brothers.
We've got extra help today here.
All right. We've got other people helping join us. I'm Mark Kiesling, the executive director of the Da Vinci Pursuit, where we create a museum without walls so that artists, scientists, and the community can create unique interactions and conversations.
And they've that already was started, unique. Yes. So we're doing that today, yes.
Yeah.
But we're actually going to be talking about food today in a very fun and interesting way. Mark, why don't you introduce our guest to everyone?
So we have back with us Colleen Kintzius. And Colleen, you're a nutritionist and you do online kinds of things now. Used to be with Eskenazi, but doing some other things, and it's really exciting to have you back.
Thank you.
Yes, good to have you here again.
Thank you.
And we have artist Terry Border. And Terry, your art is so cool.
It's weird.
It's weird, but
in a nice, in a good way.
Yeah, but
well, thank you.
But it's really great to see that there's books for children that have art and books with the artwork in it about food. So we're excited to have you, Terry.
Thank you very much.
But you use food in a very different kind of way for your art, Terry. So let's explain to people here before we.
Well, it started several years ago. For lack of money to buy art materials, I started using stuff around me. And it's like, you know, what is always around us but food, especially cheap snack food, which I am prone to use, unfortunately, with a nutrition person in the room here.
Right now.
And it was just always fun for me to bring food to life. And we already have preconceived notions about, you know, maybe the what food is about, junk food, Cheetos, you know. So it's like it was fairly easy to make humorous photos about this kind of food.
So in a way, you take food items and you kind of give them a life. You kind of create characters out of them and put them in interesting situations.
Yeah, if anybody knows the Far Side cartoon from the 90s, that's probably what my stuff is mostly related to. I give the food arms and legs and put them in situations kind of a cartoon situation. Also, you know, somebody was talking to me the other day about remember the old refreshment commercial when you go to the movie and you see the hot dog?
Yes.
You know, go to the refreshment stand. It was the hot dog and the Coke marching across the screen. That's kind of an idea where my work comes from. You know, like, okay, you have that hot dog and Coke walking across the screen, what do they do after the commercial stops? How do they relate? What are their dreams? What are their fears? So that's what I explore.
Yeah, so I'm looking at one of your books called Bent Objects, and it's hilarious because you have the ultimate couch potatoes on the book, which you've got a Pringles and it looks like a cheese curl sitting on a couch.
Right. Yeah, my idea with that, like, you know, with a Cheetos, you know, it's a very messy food. The powder always gets on your hands, and it's a very strange, artificial stuff anyway. But, you know, as a kid, I would get fingerprints all over the house with this orange stuff. So I thought, well, what if I was a cheese doodle as a teenager, and I visited my girlfriend who was a potato chip, and we're sitting on a white couch. And the father came in and saw orange dust, maybe all over his potato chip daughter. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, what? That was, yeah, one of my many strange ideas.
So, Colleen, both of those foods would probably not be in our healthiest healthiest of food.
Yeah. You know, and the company
in moderation.
The company that I work for, we categorize food as green, yellow, or red. And red, obviously, would be more of like a very calorie-dense food. So those would be more red foods. But, you know, they're still allowed just in moderation. Yeah.
And the reason for we call them couch potatoes for a reason, too.
Yeah. People have criticized me a little bit in some reviews, Kirkus reviews, kind of put a warning on my second book. It says, you know, to parents, be careful. You know, this has a lot of pictures of cupcakes and bad food, and which is true. And for the second book, maybe the book after that, it got me kind of thinking. Colleen tried to add celery and carrots. But I just don't find them as funny.
So, Colleen, you have any funny things about carrots that we can add to this conversation?
What are some personable vegetables that Terry could incorporate?
You know, I will say one of my favorite things to do is to take raspberries and put them on my finger like a little hat and draw a little face on there.
There you go. That's a good idea.
A raspberry beret.
There you go.
Yes. That is good. So maybe you'll have an effect on me and my next book will be a little bit healthier. I do have one shot I did. It was a mother carrot consoling her baby carrot after father carrot was eaten in a salad.
What did she say?
I just call it even vegetarians can be evil or something like that. Because here, you know, somebody eating their vegetables had destroyed this young family.
Yeah.
Who were so happy together.
Good excuse for a kid not to eat a salad, too.
Yes, true.
But
true.
The book says.
Yeah. So, Colleen, you get, I know you get now lots of online kinds of questions and you're responding. What seems to be kind of currently in the trend of things that you have to respond to?
Oh, boy. Mindful eating is a huge one. And really, you know, I guess we'd have to tuck this book away into a cabinet. Something that I hear a lot of is, you know, like, how do I avoid these foods that are just everywhere, right? Because they're in the grocery store, no matter where you're looking, or they're at work because they're out on the counter in the candy bowl.
Can you describe to me what mindful What does it mean in the context of food?
Yeah, so it's really kind of different for everyone. So anytime someone asks me about that, I just say, well, what does that look like for you? So for a lot of people, it's just sitting down, taking the time to think about what they're eating. And so it's using all of your senses. You know, what does it smell like, taste like, look like, feel like in your mouth? Just hitting everything there. Taking the time to not be on your phone while you're eating, like actually experiencing your food. Or for other people, it's meal planning. You know, it goes a little bit deeper than that. So thinking ahead about what they're eating, but it can take a lot of different routes.
Because, Colleen, you're an advocate of a plant-based diet. Can you kind of explain that to us?
Yeah, and I guess I would define that a little bit more as whole foods plant-based.
Whole foods, okay.
So, just eating foods that come from plants, not eating animal products. But then the whole foods part of it, too, because you can absolutely be what would be vegan, which is also no animal products, but eating a lot of junk foods. But of course, you know, you got to live a little too and have those junk foods every once in a while. So those things in moderation. But yes, a whole foods, plant-based diet.
And Terry, you have three books now. And the first one, The Bent Object, The Secret Life of Everyday Things. And then followed by, was a children's book came?
Yeah. I did have another kind of a compendium, a collection of funny pictures. Then a few years later, I have Peanut Butter and Cupcake. It's a kid's book about peanut butter moving to a neighborhood and finding a new friend. And the end friend may or may not be Jelly. You know, I don't want to say because I don't want to run the end for anybody.
Read the book, right.
But that went real well. And the book that just came out is actually my sixth children's book called Snack Attack. And I just tried to, where the previous books, the snacks live in their own world. You know, it's kind of, there's no people. There's no danger of being eaten. And in this book, the snacks kind of start by waking up on a kitchen counter. Mm. And they have heard stories about a kid monster or kid monsters out there and what may happen to them if this monster finds them. And then the adventures of trying to stay away from the kid monster. So, and it may or may not have a not totally happy ending for all the characters. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a funny ending anyway. And, it's just a lot of fun. I have the best job in the world.
Why did you gear them towards children when you first started putting them together?
Well, my first couple of books are more, like I said, a Far Side cartoon. Mm-hmm. And there's even some more adult humor. But when I wanted to make narrative books, you know, kids are just the natural audience for mm-hmm. that. So that's the direction I went. I don't know. Somebody was talking to me the other day about making a graphic novel for older children or even adults, but we'll see. That's a lot more photographs. I'm not the greatest writer. My editor helps me a lot. I come up with a theme, I come up with a basic story, and she's able to help. I am first and foremost an idea guy and a photographer, but I'm learning to be a better writer.
Because these, when you look at the book, everything's shot very up close, as if the little pretzel stick on that page right there is as big as we are. What is the scope? I mean, where do you shoot these objects, and how do you make them look so?
Well, I photograph them. It used to be our living room. Uh-huh. Now it's my photo studio. Once I actually started getting a couple of contracts, my wife threw me a bone and let me have a halfway decent size room to photograph this stuff in. And it's just on a little table. My table's about 3 foot square. But the key is when you're photographing small things, get down really low and close, and it kind of puts I shoot my photographs with the same perspective that we would have looking at each other.
Okay.
You know, not looking down like it's an object. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to treat,
like you're
treat
in
it
the
as
scene.
A, yes, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So it, you know, the art form becomes not only the narrative of storytelling and being able to do that, but you're also doing the photography to set it up in such a way that it looks human scale.
Yeah, I was a commercial photographer for several years, not photographing the most exciting things. We photographed caskets, cremation urns, television sets, just all kinds of stuff that, you know, you wouldn't think of photographing, but you know, there are catalogs out mm-hmm. there, people need to do it, and it was not exciting, so I got out of it as soon as I could because I'm more of an artist than a commercial photographer, and I'm really lucky that it's worked out like it has.
Yeah, I'm looking at a really fun page in Snack Attack, and if you don't mind, I'll just read this little piece of it, but it's Cheese Doodle got one last idea, his best one yet. He turned over the note and wrote on the other side. So there's a piece of paper here, and the note is what I love. Dear kid, please drink some water and eat nothing else from your loving mama.
But you know what, Colleen? If a kid sees a note like that, that just sets them up to find any kind of junk food in the house probably that they could get their hands on, wouldn't they?
Oh, totally. Yeah. That is just, it's like challenge accepted.
Uh-huh.
Here it comes.
And I think what's interesting, too, is about how Terry has chosen, you know, kids are they love this kind of thing. They can relate to it. They can understand it. They can learn something from it. But the same happens when it comes to teaching healthy habit eating habits. We need to start young.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think one of the best tips I have, and I think I might have talked about this last time, but for kids is just getting them excited about it. Like, you can make it fun. So there was a study that was done, and I can't remember. I want to say it was like I can't remember how many years ago. But anyway, they took foods in the cafeteria, and they changed the name of them. So, like, broccoli became strong trees or something. Uh-huh. And it really got the kids more interested in the food, and it increased the intake by, I think it was more than 50%. Wow. It was incredible.
So. I have heard the same thing about a restaurant chain that they have a vegetarian selection, and they started adding adjectives, like smoky tofu or, you know, mesquite mm-hmm. flavored or whatever, because they realize that, you know, it, just because it's healthy, the healthy people will get that already. The rest of us need a little help, you know, being pointed in that direction. And I want to say, when I am at home, my wife is a vegetarian, so pretty much I'm a vegetarian too, which, and I enjoy it a lot, but I got to admit, when I'm out at the restaurants, I have a burger or two.
Right. So, Colleen, one of the things that the two of you have in common is, in a way, you're sort of a food artist too, because I've looked at your posts, and when you post something online, you generally have made it look beautiful and tasty with lots of colors in the plates. So there is something to the visual, isn't there? If you're going to do plant-based or any kind of diet, but particularly plant-based, there must be something to the visual.
Yeah, for sure. You know, if you're looking at, and I probably shouldn't say it, but old Cracker Barrel, like one of their
yeah, sure.
ads, right? Everything is the tan bland, like it's just this brown and yellow thing. Like, it's not that appetizing, but when you're eating just plants, of course, people are just assuming that it's going to be boring. So by including a lot of different colors, or even cutting things into fun shapes, or how you're organizing it, like separating everything out by color versus mixing everything together, you can really take something that's, in theory, not that exciting and make it look really appetizing.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's important. One of the things I know that you teach about is ways to, what Terry was saying, ways to make something more appealing. Sometimes it might be the language we use mm-hmm. to describe it, but it also might be the way, what we put together with things, both in taste and smell and that.
Yeah.
How much does smell and taste affect us?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I know, and I remember this from back when I was in a brewery. I think it's like 80% of your experience with food comes from the smell. So that's why it's really important, like if you're drinking a beer, to put it in a glass versus just drinking it out of a can. Mm. But yeah, it absolutely does affect us. And, you know, it's like when you walk into a McDonald's or a Burger King, they actually have those scent
atomizers or whatever.
Yeah, so it's like you're smelling this stuff everywhere. You haven't even seen the food yet, but the fact that you're smelling it is triggering that craving in you. Or, you know, you just walk into someone's home and it smells really good. You have no idea what they're cooking. It could be totally disgusting, but if they're using the right seasonings and things, then it's going to smell amazing and you'll want it anyway. So
wow.
Well, that makes me think of when you sell a house, you know, they're always saying
absolutely.
Cookies or brownies. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what I did one time? And this was back in my little paleo hiatus that I had for a moment. I cooked bacon when I was having a showing for my home, and that sold the house.
That's a good idea.
So, but a paleo moment. So, there's nothing wrong with, like, falling off the track a little bit, right? Because I think sometimes people, like, I'm going to do this, and then they get on that route, and then they goof up and they eat something else and they're like, okay, it's shot, it's gone, I'm done.
Yeah, that's really common. So and you know, experimenting is important. Everybody is different, so figuring out what works for you, how you feel best. I was vegan, and definitely more junk food vegan, for 7.5 years, and then I started working in a raw vegan restaurant and felt terrible. But that was because my diet was super unbalanced. I was eating really high fat, no grains. I felt pretty bad.
So this is all about balance.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Totally. Yep.
I mean, it's not only about that I eat plant-based stuff.
Yes.
But I have to be balanced within that, because there's nutritional differences between different vegetables.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, I could just eat nothing but carrots or whatever and be really, really unhealthy. So, and that's another reason why I like making these really colorful bowls and things, different meals, because when you have all the different colors, you're getting a lot of different nutrients. So I'm not counting macros, and I encourage other people not to do that as well. Because really, if you're getting a nice variety, nature naturally gives you what you need through different foods.
So it's that variety that's so important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Visually, I'm sure you think about that too, Terry, when you think about who your characters are going to be and what they're going to look like when you put them on the page.
Well, for this last book, totally unhealthy. But there's three characters. One's a pretzel, which is, I suppose, sort of neutral as far as health-wise. But then the other ones, I wanted something really colorful. So I went totally artificial pink, those sugar wafer cookies that are 99.
They're beautiful.
They are beautiful.
They are.
And they don't taste too bad. They're 99 cents for like 100 of them. So that shows you the quality probably of the vitamins. There's no, and cheese doodles, of course, my old friend, which has probably zero nutritional content, but they're such beautiful colors. And because it's all artificial, I'll admit. But another reason I use them is it's almost ridiculous how artificial they look. And how geometric the sugar wafer is. It's just an interesting thing to look at. And I am hopeful that a lot of the parents that read this book to their kids, they're not going to take all their diet cues for their children from my book. You know, it's kind of like my book is kind of like maybe a bad snack or dessert. You know, you don't want to live your life from it. You just want to have a good time and enjoy it.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. I don't think parents actually will take it that way as a nutritional book, just as much as they don't take other books about other
right.
objects and then say, it's encouraging my child to do this.
Well, another thing about this book is for the first time, I kind of went out of my way to have, I just wanted to see if it could be done. This is a children's book with no moral. There is no lesson. This is just for the joy of reading. And for the enjoyment of looking at the pictures, that's why I made it. And with my earlier children's books, you know, there have been some kind of a lesson because, face it, that's what gets purchased nowadays for children's books. Heaven forbid a kid just enjoys looking at the pages. They have to have some betterment of their life afterwards, which I think it's not why we read books. We read books just for fun, but for children, we put this pressure on ourselves and on the child to learn something at all times.
There actually is a little bit of a lesson
in
here. I'm not going to give it away.
Please.
Yeah, I'm not going to know because the ending is splendid in this,
it
too.
It is.
And Terry, I know you have a big part of your presentation with your books is you go out and you read to kids. You read these books literally all over the country mm-hmm. and internationally, too.
Oh, that is the best part of my job. I mean, it's the best and the scariest because an audience of children are totally honest. You know, a first kindergarten through third grade, they haven't gotten that feeling of being a polite audience. They're either, if they don't like it, they're going to be totally quiet or maybe just maybe a little bit rowdy. But if you get good feedback from a kid, you know they really like it. So that has just been the awesome thing. And my work is funny. Kids like to have a good time and laugh. So it's always a high point of my week to talk to kids and to show them my pictures.
And do you find different reactions from kids? I know you were over in Japan. Isn't that where you mm-hmm. were not too long ago? Do kids react the same way to these kind of stories?
Kids
and,
do.
And foods?
Kids do. Yeah. I mean, I found over there the Asian people, I don't want to stereotype, but they are more reserved as an audience. And afterwards, they are very complimentary. And most were in Korea, and they were I would be doing my presentation, it would be dead silence. Ooh. And I would feel like I was laying a big egg. It's like, are these people, you know?
Nobody's laughing.
Yeah.
Nobody's saying anything.
And another thing was being translated at the same time. Uh-huh. So I'm thinking, is she doing a good job saying what I'm saying? But it's just but it was just their tradition to be quieter until the end, where the kids, they just like to have a good time over there, just like, you know, just like any kid.
That's really great. There's so much fun in that. I want to go back for a second on something that Jill was mentioning, which is that often when we see things sometimes in places that we get into our beige moment. Do you ever have, as an artist, your beige period?
There are times. Yes, there are times. It's not good for my business. I try to have a lot of color and a lot of life, but like anybody, I have those days where, I don't have a variety of things. A lot of times when I am not up to my job of having fun and making fun images, I go to an art museum. You know, this is art and science and everything program. I go to art museum and get rejuvenized myself, and I look at other people's fun work, and that mm-hmm. makes me excited, and all of a sudden I could do my job better.
Also, I know, especially in Korea, like packaging and food products are much different than here. Did you buy some things and bring back with you to create?
Oh.
Did that like energize you and give you creative ideas?
It really, yeah, just, you know, shrimp chips.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you cannot go to a market and I think their recycling programs are much better, but you can't buy an apple that hasn't been wrapped in plastic. All their fruits and vegetables are pristine. They really value, it's almost like art. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, you can go and find a beautiful, beautiful pumpkin there, or, you know, a pineapple, and it looks like a gift. They're pretty much made to give to someone as a gift, a housewarming gift or whatever. Or you can take it home but we're the same here, I guess, because I spend a lot of times perusing the produce aisles looking for vegetables for my work. And they're beautiful. I mean, you know, Colleen was talking about just the beauty of fresh carrots. And I don't know, the produce area of the store is just so beautiful. And it's a shame that we don't eat the bruised stuff or the weird-looking bananas and that kind of stuff. We kind of hide that in the back room.
Well,
yeah.
Go ahead.
And
Colleen, I mean, that's another point there, is sometimes when people are trying these new diets or trying to get new foods into their cuisine, picking up on an international cuisine that's already known for that kind of thing, it can be a help to someone. Like, what are some other international cuisine foods that we might try to integrate into our diet if we want to try to get more of this whole food plant-based program?
Everything. Yeah. I feel like so many other parts of the world are just way more into plant-based foods. Of course, like Indian food, it's super, super full of flavor, and that's going to be like a lot of lentils and different beans and things. You know, curry, there are so many. My brain is like over.
Yeah, well, that brings no. But Colleen, where you're going with that? That brings up something interesting. In our culture, a lot of times people talk about spicy, mm-hmm. and they always talk about it in a negative. But when I eat Indian food, rarely it's spicy in terms of being hot. It means mm-hmm. it's flavorful. And a lot of spices add flavor.
Yeah,
I think we have this kind of weird thing here. I don't want any spices on my food.
Yeah.
Well, then
people are allergic to flavor a lot.
Yeah, I think, for sure. Well, except when they have to put fake flavor like monosodium glutamate on something, but to enhance it. But yeah, I do think that is a part of it. The issue that we have is people think spice, they think hot.
Yeah, but just being open-minded and thinking of spices as anything other than just being spicy all the time, but thinking of it as flavorful, not spicy.
That's really great.
Colleen is our nutritionist, Terry is our artist, and you, our listeners, are welcome to give us a call if you have a question today for either one of them or our topic of food. 317-788-3314 is the number to call. We're going to take a short break, and we will be right back with more.
Hello, I'm Michael Toulouse of Classical Music Indy. As a host on 88.7 WICR, it's my pleasure to share a little information with you. The details, like Mozart's money troubles, Beethoven's ambition, Vivaldi's showmanship, that make the music come alive. But the greater pleasure by far is sharing the music itself. Share it with me here on a different kind of public radio.
Listen tomorrow morning from 6 to 10 on 88.7 WICR.
Have You Heard? Airs every Wednesday at 9 p.m. right here on WICR 88.7. Have You Heard? Is a jazz radio show hosted by Matthew Altizer and Richard Dole, where we interview some of our favorite musicians and play some of our favorite music. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 p.m. or stream us live at wicronline.org and discover some new music you didn't know you loved.
Magic isn't just spells and potions.
Do you believe in magic? I think Hollywood does, and occasionally their movies can be magical. Next time on The Score, we'll conjure up a few film spells with music and moments from Doctor Strange, Harry Potter, and a few more on the next edition of The Score.
That's The Score, Saturdays on WICR at 10 a.m.
And welcome back. I'm Jill Dittmeyer.
And I'm Mark Kiesling. And today we're pursuing the art and science of food with our guests, nutritionist Colleen Gintius and artist Terry Border. If you have a question, call us at 317-788-3314.
And we found a food item that both of you have recently tasted, and maybe a good food, bad food, the alleged the impossible burger. So Terry said you were out to road trip.
Yeah, we were on a road trip, and I don't ever go to Burger King, and I rarely go to fast food places at all. Although I have, you know, when I was growing up, it was a constant thing. But we had heard about the Impossible Burger being at Burger King, so we had to try it, and we pulled over, and we were shocked how good it tasted. I mean, does it taste like as good as like a really, really good burger? Well, you know, that's a pretty high bar, but it tastes like a burger, and I was impressed. I was impressed, and we, you know, my wife and I, we're waiting for it to be available in the local supermarket. It's not here yet, but we will definitely take a chance on it.
Okay. And Colleen, you had kind of a similar experience.
Yeah, I was at Burger Fuel in Broad Ripple. I had my burger put down in front of me, took one bite, and immediately just put it down. I was so freaked out. It was so close. I mean, granted, it's been a while since I've had a meaty burger, but I waited for the waitress to come back because I just had to be sure that it was not meat. It was just eerily close.
Obviously, they've made great strides in trying to recreate, or is it recreating the real thing, or is it trying to create something new? What do you think?
I would say new. I mean, they are doing some pretty weird things now by growing meat in a lab, so that would definitely be recreating. But, of course, that's more like for sustainability purposes to help people who want to keep eating meat. But, I would say just creating something new-ish.
I think, yeah, and I think we have reached a point in burgers that we're crossing over more anyway. So people are adding more things to the burger than just it being a plain burger and on top of it and more vegetables and other things. So it does make some sense that the taste might be easier for us to accept because of what we're doing to the burger itself.
Because the original ones were kind of like those soy burgers that were first on the market like, what, 20-some years ago that were just
not great.
Terrible. They were awful.
Or the fake bacon that looks like...
Yeah, faking.
But obviously, there is a demand for this. So when we go to the supermarket now, there are many more choices.
Oh, yeah.
Is it a matter of we really need to read the ingredients on the label, Colleen, to find out what we're getting?
Yeah. You know, everyone has their preferences. A lot of people avoid soy and whatnot. So it's really up to you, but. They're all pretty similar, I'd say. There's some type of protein base, like pea protein, soy, And then there's usually a lot of oil and such. So that's where someone who is very strictly Whole Foods plant-based probably wouldn't eat one of these burgers. But, you know, they really do try to match the same profiles as meat. So having the same fat content and protein content, all that. So it just depends on what you're trying to get out of your burger. That would be why you'd want
to. Yeah, so one of the things sometimes we forget to talk about is it's good for people's health, but another part of why is it's good for the environment. And so one of the things that we're concerned about is how much harm actually cattle do to the environment.
Yes.
When it, as much cattle as we eat. If we were doing not as much, it would be much better. But so that is a part of what you're also focusing on besides the nutritional value is the effect on our environment.
Yeah, absolutely. Just thinking about the future, that, you know, that is something that I'm very excited about. You know, when I sit down to eat something, I can think like, oh, this isn't having such a huge impact in the environment. And it's been proven, like, the greatest impact that you can make is through your food choices, you know, more than driving a car or anything else. So when you have the option, why not, right? And especially now that they're making things, like even the Impossible Burger, it looks like it's bleeding.
Oh, why?
It's so crazy. Yeah. So if you can get something that close, but also do the environment a favor, like why not give it a shot, right?
Yeah, I was reading that's why the guy invented it, was not just for physical health, but health of the planet. Mm-hmm. And that was his, you know, he got together with his friend. It's like, oh, how can we, what's the biggest thing we can do to help the earth? And I was like, okay, climate change, and then how to battle that would be to get fewer cows. And so that was the, you know, which I was surprised that he went at it from that angle. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the reason we stopped to go to Burger King was my wife wanted to taste it, but I thought it's just, it's both great that we're now at this point in human evolution where even a place like Burger King, you can get some kind of a, at least healthy option.
There's an option.
But I think it's I find it also hilarious in some weird way that, you know, and it's just my weird sense of humor, that I think we're trying to recreate this fast food flavor. And it's kind of, it gives me the idea of a photograph for myself, like the Frankenstein burger. You know, we're making something that tastes like meat, that's not really meat. Mm-hmm. But so maybe that's something I can work on.
So you're going over to your comic side here.
Yes, yes. Well, I'm never very far.
No, I was going to say there is a definite humor is a major storyline in all of your books. And that's another reason why they are so popular, not only with kids, but with parents as well, too, because there's,
well, those are the
there's
ones
some
you
good
have
humor
to,
in there, too.
If you don't get the parents, yeah, the kids don't have any money.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think one of these is the next Pixar movie. Just so
well, from your mouth to God's ears.
There we go.
There you go. So,
well, you do have a famous fan of one of your books.
Oh,
right?
That's true. You know,
your brush with fame.
My brush with fame. My first children's book, Peanut Butter and Cupcake. Kim Kardashian tweeted about it on, or I'm not sure if it was Instagram or one of her social media things. And before that, I can't say I was a big Kim Kardashian fan, and even after that, I'm not a big Kim Kardashian fan. But let me tell you, I looked at the book sales, and they skyrocketed after she mentioned
Excellent.
It. For whatever, you know. So thank you, Kim. But the funny thing is, that makes me think. Well, since her husband and father of her child is Kanye West, there is I'm saying a 15-20% chance that Kanye West has read my book and perform my rhymes for his
Rapping
daughter.
Rapping your rhymes.
Yes.
I love that idea.
That's hilarious.
It keeps me going.
Well, and talking about objects, because you look at things in a different way than most people do, too, don't you, Terry?
I do. You know, and it took me up to, and I was 40 years old, to find out how to use this weird, odd view of the world to my advantage. And I finally did. But I always, when I was a kid, I was always just a soft-hearted kid with animals and, you know, even my stuffed animals, though. You know, heaven forbid they got dirty or ripped the arm off. I just always, and the scientific word is Anthropomorphic. What is it, Jill?
Yes, I know. We all know what you're saying. Anthropomorphizing.
Yes. Sometimes I can't say that word, but I that's what my work is about. It's just, you know, I can see an object and try to imagine their life. You know, how, and sometimes to get an idea, I will see a toothbrush and imagine its day. You know, when it wakes up and it's a little holder in the bathroom and it does its job, you know, so well, you know, but it has to have that cream all over its face and then it's put into someone's mouth and moved around on these giant teeth.
You're making me feel like a horrible person. I put my toothbrush in a cabinet.
Oh, no so light. Bored. There's no light. There's nothing for me to do in there.
And it's all alone.
Shunned toothbrush.
Yes. Yes. Who were his friends? You know, was he friends with a toothpaste thing? Or, you know, that goes, you know, who? Dental floss. What is his day? And that's. And if I think about it hard enough, eventually I think of a funny story to tell.
Yeah,
I think what's really fun in all this conversation is that food can take center stage. It can take it in the terms of fun and play and being the characters in a book, but at the same time, we put it center stage as being something that's the heart of a celebration, or it's something that we look forward to coming home to do. Is to have dinner, and so I think there is this other thing about food that's beyond what we need for nourishment. And I think, Colleen, that is the key to all the work I see that you do, and in a way, you are as much an artist in that way, because what you're trying to do is just say, you don't have to think about it so much.
Yeah,
I mean, there's mindfulness that we talked about, but you really don't. Part of it is just make something that looks good, tastes good for you. That has a variety of things, and you're going to get closer all the time to being healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. Just keeping it simple, really. People say to me all the time, oh, I can never be like you because you must spend so much time in the kitchen. And really, I am extremely lazy. You know, I pick the foods that are the easiest thing to eat. I try to keep every meal under 30 minutes, and then I make a ton of food at once so I don't have to keep cooking throughout the week. But that way, too, if you're not, you know, making these elaborate, crazy meals, you have more time to spend with your family or your friends or anyone that you're connecting with over your food. So, yeah, I mean, really, you can keep it totally simple and still really.
And I think that's probably the number one thing about it for people is like, oh, I just don't have time to do that. So it's much easier to go and buy the fully produced, overly processed food, stick it in the microwave, cook it, eat it, and go kind of thing.
Yeah. And when you think about it long term, though, if you put in 30 minutes on a Monday night versus, you know, 10 minutes in the McDonald's line or whatever, it probably feels like you're saving time going to McDonald's or stopping at the gas station for something. But when you think about the long term, you know, how much time are you sacrificing literally with your life? Or, you know, if you're ill and having people take care of you. So I look at it that way, too, as in just a couple extra minutes is going to help improve my quality of life and the quality of life for everyone around me.
And you talk about with the new program that you're involved with, it's like a green, yellow, red.
Mm-hmm.
So there really are some red? Is red just...
Yeah, well, and there are some people that I kind of change that with. Because they'll hear red and they think, oh, I can't eat that at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll say, think of it as pink or gray, like some other color, because really, with Noom, nothing's off limits. It's just that you want to have less of those foods. So, and there's even healthy foods in that category, like avocado, peanut butter. It's just that those foods pack a lot of calories into a really small amount of food that doesn't really fill you up. So a red food isn't necessarily bad. I mean, they can be, like, you know, donuts are going to be in that category too, but it's just that you can still eat them just in smaller amounts to stay healthier. And then, of course, more of the green and the yellow foods to help keep you full.
Yeah, and that is very helpful. The other thing that you talk about and that I think is really helpful to people is the whole idea of whole food, meaning not processed.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my friends when they first became vegan, some of them, they were way less healthier than me in terms of what they were eating because most of what they got was processed to a larger degree than what I was eating. And so I was thinking, how can that be a good thing? And you're saying it's really not. It's really the whole, if you are going to go plant-based, you really need a whole food, not a processed food.
Yes, definitely try to focus on those whole foods. Look for alternatives to things because, you know, Doritos are, well, some Doritos are vegan. Oreos, you know, that stuff, it definitely adds up. And I was that person. And, you know, all the fake meats and things. And those foods really are great as transition items. But just like anything else, you know, they're full of things that can have a negative effect on your heart or your weight. Both. So using them as transition items.
But they make excellent subjects for books.
Yes, they're
very,
very cute.
Peanut
yes,
butter and cupcakes are big stars in your series of books.
I have a good question for Colleen. I love honey. Mm-hmm. Why is that vegan? I know, I mean, just please tell me, what is the thinking there?
So honey is actually not vegan.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah,
how
vegans
is it not
one,
vegan?
Yeah, well, it just seems like they, you know, I can see, you know, animals, you know, mistreatment of animals and whatever. It seems like they're going to make honey anyway, right? And we're just going to eat it. But it's not, some people will not eat it because it's not vegan.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of different reasons for that. But really, you know, vegans will say that it's exploiting the bees. So we're taking something from them. Then there's the more of the environmental perspective, like bees are just in such a bad place right now. They're really struggling because of all the chemicals and things. You know, they're dying out all over the place. So it's, you know, a lot of vegans just see that as we're putting this extra stress on bees by getting honey from them. We should just leave them alone, let them do their thing. But yeah, it's definitely more about exploitation, I guess.
Yeah, and I think, you know, so this is really hard for me as to, in biology to think about, but really plants have feelings and stuff too. So if I really wanted to go to the extreme of it, you know, I am actually exploiting those things that are here, but all animals need to eat something.
Yes.
And that is why we're different than the plants. And the plants are our primary producers who can take sunlight as energy and convert it into simple sugars, mm-hmm. and then we eat them to get that. And so, yeah, in a way, we always are going to be exploiting something.
Always.
So it's more about healthy eating and eating in moderation and keeping that calorie count down on, you know, on certain things, because I can eat vegan and be really eating the wrong stuff too.
Oh, yeah.
Getting off that couch like the potato chip and the Pringle. We are talking about the art and science of food this afternoon with Terry and Colleen. If you have a question, you can give us a call. And remember, this program is made possible by the generosity of an anonymous donor who supports the Da Vinci Pursuit's mission of creating a museum without walls so that artists, scientists, and the community can come together for unique activities and conversations. And we're going to continue ours in 2 minutes. We'll be right back.
Hello again, I'm Joe Girard, your host for Inside Great American Music. And as you know by now, we're here every Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Diamond, 88.7 WICR. Our show revolves around the great American songbook, and this week we continue our series of Barbra Streisand. So please join us this Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern, right here on 88.7 the Diamond, WICR.
Hello, Indiana. This is Dr. Laura Merrifield Wilson, host of Positively Politics. I'd like to invite you to join our conversation on the current issues and events in politics with the experts who know them best. Every Saturday morning here on WICR at 11:30, we break down the sometimes negative and often complicated world of politics in a nonpartisan, straightforward, and educationally rooted way. You won't want to miss the discussion on Positively Politics Saturday morning at 11:30 right here on The Diamond.
This is Dave Baghdad, host of The Kitchen Party Kaylee. I hope you'll join me every Sunday at 10 p.m. for the best music from Ireland, Scotland, Canada, and the U.S. The Kitchen Party Kaylee, Celtic music from across the globe and across town.
Yeah. Listen every weekday at noon for Smooth Jazz with Doug Housemeyer, where you can find out what's happening in the arts community from the people in the arts community. You'll get smooth jazz legends like Pat Metheny, Dave Cause, and Boney James. Smooth Jazz with Doug Housemeyer on 88.7 The Diamond.
And welcome back. We are talking about the art and science of food this afternoon. And we've been talking about, Terry, your latest book, Snack Attack. And it is a mix of, there's an important lesson that kind of gets twisted around. And Colleen, as the nutritionist, you know, we read the fake note that the snacks wrote to the kid, but the original note that mom had written for the kid was to encourage them. Hi, kiddo. I hope you had a good day at school. I had to go out, so I left you some snacks because I'll be late. Love, mom.
And
so it starts.
Yeah, and mom didn't leave the best snacks out. She's a hardworking mom, and she hasn't taken the time. And she, it's just a very bad mom. Let's admit it.
Not a bad mom. You know, just,
there's no such thing as a bad mom.
You can't be mad at mom. Imagine how mad that kid would have been if they saw a plate full of carrots.
Right. And we don't know if mom.
In between.
And we don't know if mom was actually protecting those poor carrots.
True.
That she was looking at
their baby carrots.
They're baby carrots.
They haven't matured yet. Wait, how do you come up with your ideas for your stories?
A lot of coffee.
Yeah.
A lot of coffee. Starbucks, I get totally just a caffeine buzz. I'm practically shaking.
Well, you involve peanut butter and is kind of a running.
Yes.
It's a character, a continuing character in a way, right?
I grew up in a series of books. Grew up in a middle-class home where I was peanut butter sandwiches, peanut butter and jelly was the big thing. And I still like it. And when I went over to Europe, it was interesting. Their peanut butter is not as big over there. And it's because they don't add quite the sugar that we do, I believe. It's a lot more natural. And I tasted some of it. It's like, no wonder it's not big over here. This is terrible. But, again, they're a lot more healthy than we are.
So we do have that American palate. I mean, it is true. We grow up drinking Coca-Cola and things like that. And so we do have this natural tendency and want for sweetness. And I think that's sometimes where people get confused when people do talk about fruits. They can probably understand a sweetness, but vegetables and grains. There are sweet notes in a lot of those products. So let's say, Colleen, somebody has this kind of this sweet American tooth thing, and they kind of want to make a shift in their diet. What would be a healthy, easy way to start out doing that with some simple whole-based products?
Yeah, just start making substitutions. So one of my favorite snacks is dates, in which if you haven't seen a date before, it's basically a giant raisin. And putting a little bit of peanut butter in that, since we're talking about peanut butter. And then, you know, if you're really taking baby steps, you can put a couple chocolate chips on there. But that, you know, there's a lot of plant-based sugar in that, but it's the good kind of sugar. You know, it's not processed sugar, and you've got fiber and everything else that's coming in the date, so your body's going to process that a lot better. And then, of course, fruit. You know, nature's candy, and there are so many different fun ways to do that. You can do smoothies, and like one of my favorite things to do is to take frozen bananas and blend them up into ice cream. So that's a great alternative right there.
Yeah, one of my favorite things when we would travel to Palm Springs in California, my wife and I, was they were very famous in Palm Springs for date shakes, which were dates in as an alternative to the flavorings you'd put in ice cream. They were incredible.
Awesome. Freeze them and
blend them up into the shake. Mm-hmm. And they had this natural sweetness, and that's where they got it rather than using all the sugars that they would normally use.
Plus probably good fiber in that, potassium, magnesium.
So it is amazing how you can go somewhere else and somebody has figured out that you can make it somewhat healthier. Again, calorie count a little different, but it was really, really good. Yeah. In a good way, and I would never normally think of just eating a date.
Oh, yeah. And then the cool thing, too, is that as you're eating more whole foods, your taste buds will change. So you might find that if you're eating more whole foods, plant-based, and then one day you're like, man, I've just got to go get that shake from Steak and Shake or whatever, and you have it, and your head will just explode. Like, it won't be able to handle the sugar because everything has changed chemically within your body to where then, you know, processed sugar becomes way more intense. And same thing with salt and
I think that's another important part. I know for me that when I've changed my diet to be healthier, that my body actually rejects, doesn't like the other. In other words, I don't feel well. It tastes good, it's great, but I don't feel well often after it. So your body does adapt to good eating.
Oh, yeah. I mean, your gut is talking to you all the time. So I was just saying, you know, want some more of those healthy foods.
And obviously a big part of good nutrition and everything, but is also activity too. I mean, we talked about this too. I mean, if you eat more than you expend, you're going to gain weight no matter what it is. And your stories, Terry, your food characters are very active. They're always doing something. And you use, are these paper clips that you bend to give them arms and legs and...
It looks like paper clips, but they're just regular pieces of hardware wire. And I learned that the more action I can have them appear, they just look like they're alive instead of just standing there. Yeah, yeah. And then there's a lot of times that that's another way I get ideas is just to put some arms and legs on a piece of garlic or whatever, and just imagine in a scenario, what's he doing today? And pose him, maybe. A lot of times when I'm trying to pose an object in my work, I've watched a lot of silent movies, you know, Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton, and they were very exaggerated in their poses. And I will stand in my living room and kind of experiment in poses with the shades drawn. So nobody can see me. And that's kind of how I pose my character.
So, Terry, that's really important because that is the art form that many animators use, which is a stick form to start with, because I can do all of the emotion that I need in stick fingers.
Yeah. If you can do it in stick form, stick figures, you can do it in anything. And a lot of times in animation, the animators themselves will go through the motions that their characters will use, and they'll film each other and then see, you know, then see how they should pose their animated figures.
Right. It also, for your books, it gives a really childlike quality on its own because that's sort of how children learn to draw something.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And I am not the best artist, but I'm a good photographer. And having a childlike perspective is a good way to describe me in all forms of life. And luckily, I've worked to make it good for my art.
Yeah, and having that childlike perspective, Colleen, to food. I think food should just be kind of fun.
It should be. Why not, right? Just, you know, taking a seemingly boring thing, but then finding ways to make it entertaining. You know, talk to your food. Make your food talk back. Like, I do that with my pets all the time. They have their own voices and accents. So... Yeah.
What kind of accents do your pets have?
Oh, it really depends on the day. My dog is 14, so sometimes she's got like this old lady accent. It's whatever her mood is that day. So.
Any of your carrots have an accent?
Oh, gosh. I'll have to work on that one. Not yet.
That's really a cute idea. Yeah, and actually that's a really good idea for parents. Is to turn, like you were talking earlier, that you put what on your finger?
Oh, the raspberry.
A raspberry.
Yeah. Like a hat.
And it can have a voice, right? And it can talk, and maybe it talks like Prince.
Some Prince.
Yeah.
Well, it's that breaking down the barriers for people to not be so afraid of what they're eating, of what the choices that they're making.
Yeah.
That people are afraid they're going to make the wrong choice.
Yeah. I mean, there is no... If you're eating whole foods, there really is no wrong choice. Like, there's nutrition in there for you. So, and that's another thing. I think people get really hung up on, oh, I need to try all these new foods, these weird foods I've never had before. You know, if you want to eat healthier, focus on what you do know that you love. So if that's literally just carrots, just eat more carrots. And then next week, maybe try a little bit of celery. But have fun with it, you know, put them in different dips. Like, that's what makes foods exciting. Just like with these books, you know, instead of having just a kiwi, we have a kiwi here shaving its back.
And the title is "The Kiwi's Getting Ready for the Beach."
Yeah.
Right, and they are kind of hairy. So
it's somewhat autobiographical there. I did do a photograph once of a piece of celery, and she was trying to make herself more attractive, so she was sitting at the makeup table, and she was putting peanut butter all over her. And that's one way to make me peanut butter, or a celery. Yeah, I love peanut butter.
Right. One of the things I love about this conversation today is that you really are getting at the heart of why we do this program, but also why I formed Da Vinci Pursuit, which was using arts, culinary arts, as a way to get people to think about the science and to think about the understanding of what's going on in nutrition and even play with your food in a way with what you've got, Terry. And so that's very exciting to think that those are entry points people into thinking. And sometimes we can use fun and playfulness as doing that. So that's great.
That's true.
What are you working on now, Terry? What's next for you?
Well, I'm from my next picture book, I just finished next year's, and it is about a group of snacks. Again, we have a cheese doodle and pretzel and a cookie, but a different cookie. And they get stuck in a mad scientist's laboratory.
Ooh.
And this scientist is using, he is a peanut, and he is creating a Frankenstein monster and ends up being a Nutter Butter cookie.
Uh-huh.
So it kind of my thinking with a Nutter Butter, it looks like a peanut, it tastes like a peanut, but it's not really a peanut. So, and then maybe it doesn't end well for one of those cookies. That's all I can say.
And Colleen, if people want to learn more about giving the whole food plant-based diet a try, where's a good source for them?
I'd say go to my website. It is salubriouslife.info, so S-A-L-U-B-R-I-O-U-S, life.info, in which really I don't have not much personal content on there. It's just all of my favorite resources. So you can find tons of food blogs, information like on how to reverse chronic diseases through diet, just lots of info there.
Good place for people to go.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys very much. And we'll have info on our website too, right, Mark?
We will. And we're going to put pictures of your projects, and we'll put those links on our website, thedaVinciPursuit.com. where we create museums without walls so artists, scientists, and community can come together to enjoy unique activities and conversations.
Till next time, I'm Jill Dittmeier.
And I'm Mark Kiesling, reminding you to
stay curious.
When you listen to Folk Alley, you experience a tradition that's been handed down for hundreds of years. I'm Elena C., and Folk Alley is a link in the chain that includes the ancient child ballads and the latest releases from your favorite singer-songwriters. Bluegrass, Celtic, Americana blues, and much more. It's all part of the Folk Alley mix. So I hope you'll join me each week on Folk Alley.
Join us for Folk Alley, Sundays at 9 p.m.
Hello, I'm Michael Toulouse of Classical Music Indie. As a host on 88.7 WICR, it's my pleasure to share a little information with you. The details, like Mozart's money troubles, Beethoven's ambition, Vivaldi's showmanship, that make the music come alive. But the greater pleasure by far is sharing the music itself. Share it with me here on a different kind of public radio.
Listen tomorrow morning from 6 to 10 on 88.7 WICR.